Well, hi everybody, Father Alex here, host of the Godcast and also the vicar of St Matthew's Church in Burnley, and also the author of Our Daily Bread from Argos to the Altar, a priest story, which is available in all good bookshops and online. My guest today on the Godcast is Phoebe Smith. Phoebe is an award-winning writer. She's an adventurer. She's published numerous books, and she's recently brought out her new book called Wayfarer, which, if you're watching, I'm holding in my hand now. That's also available in all good bookshops. But we can have a chat about the book and a few other things. So I do hope you enjoy this interview now. If you do, then please subscribe to my YouTube channel or follow me on Twitter or X, as it's now known, at Alex D. J. Frost. So there we are. I do hope you enjoy this interview now with Phoebe Smith. Well, I'm delighted to say that joining me on the Godcast this week is Phoebe Smith. Phoebe is an adventurer, an award-winning writer and author of her brand new book, Wayfarer, which we'll be talking about in a few moments. Phoebe, it's great to get you on the Godcast. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
How does it feel having another book out, you know, on the shelves in online? Is it you, because you've written quite a number of books, haven't you? Is it still an exciting time for you?
Do you know? So this is book number 11. So you'd think I'd be over the nerves of a new book coming out, but I'm definitely not. But do you know what? The difference of Wayfarer is that it's part memoir, so it's the most personal book I've ever written. All my others have very much been, I've done a lot of guidebooks, and I have done narrative books before, but I was always encouraged when I started writing that you either play the hero or the fool, and I very much cast myself as the fool. And it was quite, you know, I tried to be funny, but Wayfarer's different. Wayfarer's seeing my journey on these ancient pilgrim routes through Britain, obviously starting in Spain on the Camino de Santiago. And then as I'm walking these pilgrim paths, being confronted with some very personal sort of traumas and events that have happened in my life and processing those at the same time. So it's very different from anything I've written before. And so I think that makes me especially nervous. Although I have to say, the one review I was waiting to get was the one from my dad. And he read it before it went out. And so once he gave me the okay, then that was probably the most nerve-wracking bit.
Yeah, we all look for our parents' approval, don't we, when it's something as precious as like a memoir. Have you always been an adventurous kind of soul, Phoebe? You know, were you kind of in the mud as a kid? You know, were you up trees, that kind of thing?
Do you know, you'd think I would be. I was born actually in Warrington, but then moved to North Wales when I was very young. But I lived in an area well known by the tabloid press as the Costa del Dol. So we're talking the coastline along sort of Colwyn Bay, Prestatyn, Rhyl, that sort of area. And even though Snowdonia National Park was probably about 20 miles away, I didn't really have that connection with it. I didn't know where I could go. I didn't understand rights of way. I didn't have the kit. It was very expensive to buy. You know, now we've seen the proliferation of much cheaper gear, but back then, you know, it felt like other people did that and that it wasn't my world. And as a girl as well, it was, you know, I wanted to join the Scouts, but back then Scouts were allowed to choose whether or not they had boys and girls or just boys. And the one where I was, it was just boys. So I really didn't get into the outdoors till I was much older and actually went traveling and had this moment when I was in Australia and I was on a working holiday visa. And I remember touring around various parts of Australia and thinking, how come I'm doing this here and people are showing me things that aren't that old? And yet there's so much in my own country and so much amazing landscapes in my own country. And it was coming back after that, sort of in my early 20s, that I started to learn about wild camping and started to push myself with long walks and realize that I could be an adventurer and I could do these incredible things. And yeah, it took me going to the other side of the world to realize what I had on my own doorstep.
Yeah, I'm not sure people would give the title adventurer professional occupation. You know, so what were you doing in the real world while this was all going on, Phoebe? Were you kind of plowing your furrow in academia or business? What was your background?
So I got a job on a local newspaper. So I was a chief reporter on a local newspaper in North Wales. And I was in charge of doing the supplement as well, which was kind of a lifestyle supplement. And I would kind of found a way to combine what I loved, what I wanted to do, which was go and find adventures with my job. So I would go and try something adventurous and then write about it for the newspaper. So in North Wales, I managed to drive a Hagland, which is an all-terrain vehicle they often use in the Arctic or the Antarctic. I managed to go and explore an abandoned the former Denby Mental Institute. Managed to go and explore that. I went in a hot air balloon with a guy who just passed his test. So I managed to bring that into my career, and then from there I went on and worked for an outdoor magazine called Trail, and then obviously kind of cut my teeth with getting my skills to be in the outdoors and wilderness and navigate on my own. And then I was doing travel as well. I still had that kind of wanderlust in me for travel, and went on doing my travel writing. But between all that, whenever I had free time, it was having these sort of adventures in the UK. And wild camping was the thing that I just connected with. It was free. I could just go. I could just do it for one night if I wanted to. And it was doing that. It was almost an escape from life and stresses, and then became known for doing that. So would write about it, and then did various charity events, extreme sleeped on porta ledges across Britain, and just kind of built my reputation that way.
Can you remember the first adventure you had that really left its mark on you? I mean, mine was a terrible one. It was with the Cubs, where I had a big hole in my wellies and went home crying. But that was for the wrong reasons. But was there some was it, what was the experience for you that you thought, wow, this is for me?
It was my first solo wild camp, and I went back to North Wales. I was working sort of in the Midlands at the time, for Bauer Media, writing for Trail magazine, and I wanted to do a solo wild camp, and they said to me, oh, well, you can't really do it on your own, it's too dangerous. And I said, no, it's not. You've let a male writer go and do it on his own. And they're like, no, it'd be different for you. And I'm quite a stubborn person, so that's like a red rag to a bull to me. So I went and did it, and it was everything went wrong. Like, I thought it was going to be really bad weather, so I packed all this warm weather gear and waterproofs, and then it was suddenly a freak kind of heat came in, and I got sunburnt. I got eaten alive by midges. I got ticks on me. I ran out of water in the middle of my second day and had to boil water from a stream, and then it was so hot I couldn't drink it. So much went wrong, but I remember the great thing was finding that camp spot and being on my own in the middle of the mountains and feeling like it was all just for me and hearing the wildlife and seeing the stars. And then the second moment was getting back to my car afterwards and catching sight of my sunburned, midge bitten face in the rearview mirror and thinking that even though I'd never looked less glamorous, I'd never looked so good, because I was just exuding confidence and passion, and just felt amazing. And I thought, if I could bottle this feeling and sell it, I would be a millionaire. I couldn't. So instead, it was about writing about it and telling people about it.
And was that feeling spiritual in any way?
I think if you want to, if you, I would never label it that. I think and this is something I go talk about in Wayfarer, is that it's not that I'm anti-religion. I think it's just that when I was in school, I remember going to a biology class and being taught about evolution and being shown pictures of a whale that still had finger bones in its fins to show how we were related. And I loved that. It made sense to me how we were part of this natural world. And then I went to my RE lesson, and the Reverend Cook basically was talking about Genesis. And she said to me, she was explaining it, and it was quite an intelligent question, I think, for an 11-year-old to ask how evolution fit in with it. And it was a genuine, I wasn't trying to put heat on her. I genuinely couldn't, I was trying to match the two. And she basically told me off and said she didn't come from an ape, did I? And I said, well, yeah, I've just been taught that in the last class. And it was that moment where I saw there was a split. You could either have one thing or the other. And I think researching pilgrim paths and walking pilgrim routes as someone who doesn't class herself as a religious person has really helped me kind of reconcile that and understand the massive role that Christianity played in the history of Britain. And I don't think I understood. History was another subject that I've definitely felt was not for me. You know, we were taught about World War II, which was mainly men going off fighting and women staying at home, or Henry VIII, whose wives were getting beheaded and knocked up and all this. And I didn't feel like that was a place for me. So doing this kind of reignited this understanding of going back, connecting the dots with the history of my country, connecting the dots with the history of Christianity and religion, and seeing how they're so intertwined, you can't really separate them. And they're so much about what Britain is. And then by doing that, I helped connect the dots of my own personal history, which is what I do in the memoir, and kind of reconcile those as well and understand why leaving home at, you know, 16 under a cloud, having a bad relationship with parents, losing my mum at 19 to cancer, then going into toxic relationships after another, why that all happened. And I think you could say being in the outdoors and nature is a spiritual experience. I think in the UK, we kind of shy away from anything that's to do with religion. And pilgrim paths were such a big part, and pilgrimage was such a big part of our lives before Henry VIII, again, he comes up into everything, before he banned them. And, you know, everyone could do a pilgrimage, all walks of life. You had the very rich and you had the very poor, and they would all still go on a pilgrimage. And it was very much accepted that you could take time out from your lives that were often very hard to go on this pilgrimage. And along the way, you met new people, you heard new ideas, you shared thoughts, you shared bread with people. People looked out for one another. And you had that sense of that time away to make meaning. And so by banning pilgrimage when 400 years ago, you know, by Henry VIII doing that, he stopped us all being allowed to take that time out to make sense of things and to make meaning. And walking these pilgrim routes in particular versus my other adventures that have been very much just about solo adventures, climbing mountains, getting into the wilderness, pilgrimage reconnected me with people. And that's both people on the ground to see how people are very kind to you when you say you're on this pilgrim route and they want to help you, but also walking in the footsteps of my ancestors and realizing that when you're on these routes, which some of them even predate Christianity, you know, they were pagan routes to holy wells, to wells they thought were important because it was life-giving. You know, you're never really alone that way because you're always walking with someone from the past. And I found this great connection with people from my past who were walking these exact same trails to try and make meaning, which is exactly what I was trying to do.
Well, do you know what, Phoebe? I think you should be an RE teacher because I think that's quite profound. You know, I think because you actually highlighted there why lots of people turned off or turn off from religion because somebody says, if you don't believe this, then get out of here. But then you've also talked about the, I really like what you talked about walking in the way of other people, you know, and I feel that as a priest, being, I don't know what number priest I'm at St. Matthew's where I'm the vicar, but I definitely feel that responsibility and the awe and wonder of, I'm probably not as good as what's gone before me, you know, and all that. But also, I think there's the connection to the outside of you know of what it does. I and connecting that with history as well. You know, I've not been a lifelong Christian, and one of the pieces in the Bible I really like is the 23rd Psalm, as I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And one of the joys of that was I went on pilgrimage to the Holy Land, and I stood where it was believed that that was where it was about. And that had a really profound, that continues to have a profound effect on me. It's like, okay, the whole thing might not be exact. I might not be stood in exactly where it happened, but I'm somewhere near. And I don't know whether that's just spiritual or whether that's just a lovely warm feeling. I'm not quite sure, but it's significant, you
It
know.
is. And you know, so my book starts on the Camino de Santiago, so arguably the most famous pilgrim route in Western Europe. And it starts with me being sent as a journalist, as a travel writer, to report on how to fit in doing the Camino within a week of annual leave. And I went there very much before I'd walked any other pilgrim path, very much with the angle of I'm just doing this because it's a nice long walk in the outdoors. But it was only on the way interviewing other pilgrims and hearing their stories and realizing that every single person had a they were all coming from very different places, very different countries, but they all had similar stories of reaching a point where they just didn't know what to do next. And, you know, there was a father-daughter who the mum had recently died. There was a woman whose house had burnt down. She'd lost everything. There were divorcees. There were people who couldn't get into college or go and do the university course they wanted. And I found this just so incredible that it was bringing everyone together on this route. And I mean, that's the part of Christianity that I do love, this idea of being good to other people, welcoming people, helping people, going on a long walk, you know. But when I reached the end in the Santiago de Compostela in the cathedral, and they have, and I'm not sure if you've been, but they have the Botafumeiro that flies through the air and the incense expels, this great moment that to a lot of the pilgrimages then, it's this wonderfully joyous occasion where everything suddenly is come together and they're about to embark on something new. But for me, it wasn't any of those things. For me, it made me realize I've completely lost my way. I'm in a relationship I'm not happy with. I'm in a job I'm not happy with. And I've got to change something, which kickstarted then my journey on British pilgrim paths. And just recently, I went back to the Camino de Santiago just 2 weeks ago, and I took a friend with me, and we did the Camino Portuguese. So the first time I did the Camino Francis, we did the Camino Portuguese, and we started in Tui and walked up from there. So again, still the last 100K. And I do, I also do a podcast called Wonder Woman, and I sort of mention it now. And it was wonderful doing it again in a very different headspace, because that's the thing about pilgrimages. They're never the same pilgrimage twice, because your headspace or the time of year, all these things make it a very different experience. And pilgrimages, again, there's never always one route. There's many routes, a lot like life. There's so many routes to get to that same end goal. And something happened to me on this time. Something always happens in Santiago de Compostela. And it was, I got to the square. So there's a big square where all the pilgrims arrive to when they've completed it. No matter where they've come from, it's this square right next to this beautiful Portico de Gloria. And I was there, and then I got speaking to a woman who worked in the hotel, and she told me something. She said, you know how all the pilgrims meet here? Well, this actually is not where all the pilgrims used to meet back in the day. This is actually the back end of the cathedral. They used to meet at the other side, and they would go in, you know, have the mass, have the Botafumeiro, and then these two doors would open. The town hall that's currently in front of it wasn't there. And they'd open at the end of mass to see the sun setting over the hills in front of them of Galicia. And she said, and it was symbolic of the doors opening onto their new life after they've gone through this experience. And I said, I find that really wonderful that everyone arrives in that square now thinking it's an ending, whereas actually what the end of a pilgrimage represents is a beginning. And to me, there's a huge comfort in that.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, you set it up nicely. You said you walked the pilgrim with your friend on the second time. Do you have a preference, Phoebe, of being alone, walking in solitude or with groups? And also, do you think there's something, do you prefer walking for yourself or walking for others? I asked that question. I did the Three Peaks Challenge some years ago, and yeah, I hated it, if I'm being really honest. we raised lots of money for charity, but I it was a slog for me.
Yeah.
When I finished, I was so exhausted. And personally, you know, I love walking in solitude, you know, for long distances. What's your thoughts?
So I do love walking by myself. I do find when we walk on our own, we're not distracted by the small talk that often happens when you're walking with other people, be it a friend or just a group that you've gone walking with. And you notice a lot more, you smell things, you hear things, you're very aware of things. I, funny enough, in the book I talk about it, I go on a silent pilgrimage with a group. And we walked to, we're going to Chichester Cathedral from, it was just a micro pilgrimage, a day thing, started in a village in this church and walked. And it was the first time I've walked with a group, but no one's talking. And, you know, everyone absolutely loved it because I suppose they felt the solidarity of people and being able to follow someone and know where we were all going. But there wasn't the pressure, which there sometimes is, to kind of talk and make conversation. And actually, everyone said, we noticed the birds, and we noticed the bird song changing from when we started started in the countryside, we could hear the robins, we could hear the blue tits. And then as we got closer to Chichester, which is obviously by the water, we could hear the seagulls, and we really appreciated that. And we could hear how the sound of the wind rushing through the tree leaves was very similar to the sound of waves on the beach. And, you know, everyone just noticed things a lot more. So I do love solo walking, and I feel like it's necessary. I have to do a certain amount of solo walking every week even. But I also, through pilgrimage again, which is a very different type of walk than, say, in doing the Three Peaks, which is, like you said, for me, it's too fast. Doing the Three Peaks challenge is too fast. I've done it, but I've done it over 3 nights and slept on the top of each one. That's my kind of Three Peaks. But going with a group of people, it does, like I said, it does reconnect you with others. And I think what I realized on my pilgrim routes, which a lot of them in the book I am alone, but some are with people, is I realized I'd almost become almost pathologically self-reliant to the point where I forgot that actually, you know, connections with other people is what makes us human and can really help us through some difficult times. And we have to be open to that. So it doesn't mean I've got rid of my love of solo walking and being somewhere on my own. But I do now understand that walking with others can also be joyous in a very different way.
Yeah, it's so interesting listening to you talk. I mean, I've quite a few struggles to be or being ordained, a lot of setbacks. And I think this was kind of like 10, 15 years ago where I'd kind of really discovered walking in a different way. I was asked to go away and think about things, and I did that through walking with my dogs, and I just saw things that I never saw before. You know, I saw the seasons changing before my very eyes, and birds appearing on branches, and now I don't miss these things. I celebrate and rejoice in them. But just moving towards your memoir, I can't believe how fast this interview has gone. when I'm walking, I do think, you know, I think about the past, I think about the present and the future, and that's what your book's about, isn't it, really? It's I was wondering how you came about putting this book together. Did you plan the walks and to tell the story at the same time, or had you done the walk and then thought, right, I need to commit this to words? How did it evolve?
Yeah, so when I was doing the pilgrim paths, I never thought I was going to write a book about it. I did use them as healing. I mean, I had reached a point, you know, like you, I felt so down about things. And to be honest, you know, I'd been through some such horrendous relationship things, some issues with work, that I didn't want to be here anymore. I wanted to end my own life. And a chance phone call from someone I didn't even know that well stopped that. And I knew that I needed help. I knew I needed to do something. And, you know, I'm not religious, and I'm happy to say that, but these pilgrim routes did save me. And the more I did them, and the more I could use them as a tool almost to process the past, to help me then, I would say you can't move forward until you understand the past. You've got to walk in the past to get to the future. And that's what they did to me. And I wanted to write the book to tell people to basically, once I'd finished this pilgrimage journey I was on, I wanted to share that the healing power of pilgrimages with people. That was genuinely when I came up with the idea for the book. And I didn't know how personal I would go. And I actually, when I spoke to the publishers about it, it was very much pitched as the joys of pilgrimage and what they can do. And it's almost like going back to my whole thing of religion and history being so intertwined that you can't really adequately separate the two. You've got to make sense of them together. I couldn't tell my story of the joy of pilgrimage and what they did for me without being open and honest and sharing the personal stuff. And so doing the pilgrim walks was cathartic, but then writing the book was actually very cathartic too. And things just, it was like turning on a tap, you know, these things just kept coming out. And I remember as I was typing thinking, Am I really going to share these things? But I just went with it, and I just kind of put it all out there, and then obviously edited some of it back and did that. But no, I never intended it to be. And I remember sending it to the publishers and saying, I know this isn't quite what I said it would be, but I do think this is an important book. And they thankfully agreed and loved it. And looking at it now with the hindsight of I've written it and it's out there, is that I'm really glad I did, because I think there's such a especially in the way the world is now with social media and, you know, everyone just kind of publicizing the good things and, you know, everything going well. And so many people had said to me, oh, your career's really well, you have it all, everything's going. And I was like, but I really don't. There's so much going on behind it. And by opening myself up and being honest, I was freed by it. I was freed by the past and the things that were stressing me out, that were worrying me, that I thought would come out. And now I feel I can move forward. And what I hope is that if anyone who reads it is either going through some of these same things or is processing having gone through those things, that it helps them. Because I think if I'd have read that someone else was going through it when I was, I think that really would have changed things for me. So that's my main reason of why I've kind of really bared my soul.
Yeah, and you have, and you know, it took me a little bit by surprise. You know, I have read the book. It's actually on page 57 where you talk about wanting to take your own life, Phoebe. And people will be watching this thinking, gosh, Phoebe looks so well and healthy and chirpy and cheery. Phoebe, I wasn't planning to ask this, but tell us about how you got, you know, because I think we need advocates for good mental health and recovery. So what can you say about that to us and a little bit about that experience, if you would?
Yeah, sure. So I, you know, like I said in the book, I went into the woods. I was had sleeping pills, had some whiskey, was about to end it all. Couldn't bear it anymore. And then this girl called me, who I knew from social media. I'd met her a couple of times, and she just called me because she'd not seen anything from me or heard me from me for a while. And I just kind of broke down and told her, and she made me realize that it wasn't worth. There was help, there was things I could do, and she encouraged me to get help. And so the next day I went to see the doctor, and I told them what had happened, and they, you know, got me to set up with a therapist. They offered me some antidepressants, which I took the prescription, didn't take for a while because I felt there was quite a stigma to it, because you'll read if you read the book, you know, my dad had been through a breakdown when I was just about 14, and it was very much back then no one talked about mental health. So the idea of him seeing like a psychiatrist and being put on antidepressants back then was this big taboo and the worst case scenario. So it still had that stigma for me. But I soon realized that I had to do it, because it wasn't, I was spiraling and spiraling, and the littlest thing, you know, good things were happening. And I would, to the outer world, I would be this chirpy, cheery self. But inside, I was just spiraling down and down, and little things would just trigger it. And I thought, I've got to stop this cycle. And so I did go on the antidepressants, and I'm still on them today. And the mixture of having counseling, the mixture of doing that, and the mixture of being outside and making myself go on these paths that were no longer just about getting to the top of something, pushing me to my physical limits. They were about taking my time and walking in these footsteps and trying to just work through things in my head. And sometimes I'd go out there thinking, I'm going to think about this relationship, say, that's really coercive and really bad for me, and I'm going to try and work out what I'm going to do. And I'd fully intend for that to happen on the walk, but actually once I got out, I wouldn't think about it at all. I would just be in the moment. I would just think about my foot placements. I would just think about the outdoors, about the birds, about, oh my goodness, isn't this wonderful? And that was healing in and of itself. So I'd say to anyone who has been there, you know, there is help you could get, and really do try and investigate that, and whatever's right for you. And like you said, people are often surprised when I say it, but I think that's why it's so important to be open and honest about it, and say, if you are struggling, as many of us do, and put on this mask of everything's fine, I'm great. It's even more important. And for people who aren't going through it, but just to check in with people around you that they're okay. And sometimes it can be as simple as I had a friend at work when I was going through what actually was an eating disorder, where I was just not allowing myself to eat. It took someone just going, "Are you okay?" And suddenly that was just an acknowledgement from someone. And I never thought it would come from that person. But I needed to hear it. And sometimes those little words of, "Are you okay?" can make a massive difference to someone.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for you saying that, Phoebe. And if it's any additional help, you know, I'm somebody who's received counselling support as well. I'm not afraid to say it, and I've reaped the benefits of it and feel much better for it. So, Phoebe, I've loved chatting to you. Just want to something else that struck me is your you co-founded the charity, didn't you? The We Too Foundation. This sounds fabulous. I mean, can we're in the context where we are in Burnley, we have some very deprived families that we are dealing with, and some of them haven't even left Burnley on a bus. Some of them
No.
just haven't been to the theatre, they haven't been to the seaside, and so just tell us a bit about this project, would you, Phoebe, please?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, it's the We Too Foundation, and I co-founded it with my friend Dwayne Fields, who is also an adventurer. And his story was he was born in Jamaica and then came over and lived in Hackney, central London, got involved in didn't get involved with gangs, but obviously gang crime was there. He ended up getting stabbed, someone pulled a gun on him, and he realized that he could easily go down the wrong path. And it was the outdoors, funnily enough, it was the Three Peaks that kind of turned things around for him, and made him reignite a love into the outdoors. You've heard my story of growing up where I did on the Costa del Dole, and experiences were very limited there, So when we came together and realized for very different reasons, we'd had very we'd hit that same glass ceiling and experiences had been limiting. We were like, we don't want to pull the ladder up behind us. We want to put it down and get more people up here. So that was the we two, the double meaning of two of us, the we two, but also we two, we everyone deserve a place to be up here. And so we fundraised for it to kickstart it. We walked the length of mainland Britain over 40 nights from the northernmost point to the southernmost point, about 838 miles over winter, over Christmas. And pulled all our stuff in sleds. And that kickstarted enough funding for us then to, in 2022, we took our first group of young people from across Britain to Antarctica. And before they went, what we did was we worked with them that they could pay it forward by doing an environmental good deed in their local community. So the idea was that by someone from some of these most deprived areas being able to come on this experience of a lifetime, their whole community would somehow benefit. So we had them doing rewilding, litter picking, we had them doing, one of them did a clothing swap with people because they couldn't afford to buy new clothes, so swap clothes, and all you have to do to pay is to give an environmental good deed, like I'm going to recycle more or this sort of thing, or I'm going to take the bus more, I'm not going to go in the car. And it's so wonderful working with our young people, and we're currently looking for nominations for the next trip, which we go in October to take another 10 to the Galapagos. Our whole thing is going in the footsteps of famous explorers who were from very privileged backgrounds to kind of change that dynamic, change that face of adventure. And so we work with 16 to 19-year-olds. That most of them are nominated by someone else, so social workers, police officers, teachers, foster carers, youth workers, and it's done so much for them and also for their communities. One of the young lads has gone back to his old school and talked three young people out of joining gangs. So we know this, that is powerful and it works. And we work with 16 to 19-year-olds specifically because I think that's an age where I'm sure you appreciate this with Burnley and the young people there. You could easily take the wrong path or a path that perhaps you don't want to take if you're not shown there's another way. And so yeah, that's in the nutshell what we do.
And people can check that out. You've got a website, haven't you?
Yeah, it's Team We Two, which is team then WETWO dot com, and nominate on there and find out more about us.
Okay, well, before you go, thanks for that, Phoebe. Before you go, I want to just see if you've done Lancashire. Have you got any favorite walks? Have you done Pendle Hill, for
I've
example?
done Pendle Hill and I've spent the night on Pendle Hill. Absolutely love it there. I do. I love it. And you've got the Forest of Bowland is Lancashire, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's not far from Burnley,
Yeah.
just
So
over
Forest of
the hill.
Bowland. I love doing the Forest of Bowland because it used to be so off limits to walkers. You've probably guessed from me, I quite like doing things you're not supposed to. Like pilgrimages are still technically banned, so it feels quite fun to be able to go do them. We shouldn't be doing them. Yeah, no, I love it there. I love the UK. I think that's what all my adventures have shown me. And I still travel around the world for my job as a travel writer, but I still love coming home. And I think we've got some incredible landscapes and it's about getting more people into them and helping improve access for people like your young people in Burnley to be able to see it and experience it and give them the tools, the knowledge, the kit that they need to be able to do it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We have a camper van. We're headed over to North Wales in a few weeks to do
Nice.
some of the North Wales pilgrimage trail. So I'm quite excited about that. So that's going to be fab.
You'll love it. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm real looking forward to it. So here's the book again, Wayfarer. It's with our friends at Harper North. I've got my book here. We're with the same publisher, Phoebe. There's my book,
Amazing.
Our Daily
Congratulations.
Bread. So double plug. Thanks ever so much for coming on the Godcast.
Thank you so much. It's
It's
been a
been a real
pleasure to
pleasure,
talk to you.
and thanks for everybody for watching. And just go and check out the YouTube channel. There's hundreds of interviews with celebrities, explorers, comedians, writers, everybody. So Phoebe, thanks again. Thanks for coming on the Godcast. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.